News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
All right, 8:07 on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for listening to Mobile Mornings. Going to turn up your voice here for this hour, 251-343-0106. This segment of the show brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, Desi Tobias and Brian Comer. A couple of local guys doing a lot of great work for the people of Mobile and Baldwin County and the surrounding area as well. And with this being summer, it's a fun time. A lot of the time. Also, there are some times where you could find yourself in trouble, whether you're out on the water or at your place where maybe a lot of other people are vacationing nearby. There's some things you need to keep in mind this summer to keep you, you know, out of any trouble. And one of those things are golf carts. We're seeing more and more golf carts than ever, which is great. You know, it's fun to ride around on one of those, especially if you're just traveling around the neighborhood or if you live near the beach driving down there. But with so many golf carts around, that's led to more golf cart accidents, of course. Many people may have never operated the golf cart when they encounter one at their vacation rental. So picture you're down there at the beach doing what you normally do. Maybe you're on Dauphin Island, maybe you're in Baldwin County, and somebody who rented a condo or a home just a few streets down from you has one of these golf carts they've never driven. Maybe they even put one of those teenagers in it who can barely drive as it is. Remember, the rules of the road still apply, and as my dad told me once, you can be right, but you can be dead right. So always pay more attention when you're in one of those golf carts. Make sure you're following the rules of the road and that your golf cart is street legal. But if you're just driving in your standard vehicle and you see those golf carts out and about, make sure you pay extra close attention to them. If you've been in an accident or if you know someone who's been in a similar accident, Tobias and Comer Law have worked a number of cases regarding that exact thing. And you can call for a free consultation at any time, 251-432-5001, or check out their awesome website, TobiasComerLaw.com. They have all kinds of great resources for things like boating safety, golf cart safety, driving during terrible storms, and things of that nature. So check them out today, TobiasComerLaw.com.
Checking the text line, it's more of the same. Ron and Mobile are just out in Sims. He says, just voted crickets in Sims. Roy in Spanish Fort, in and out. Three people were in the building, and I never saw it this light before, is what Roy is saying. Josh is out at Baker. He says more people need to get out. It's pretty low right now. In Fairhope, I was number 13 at 720. So he is talking about a low turnout in where he's voting in Fairhope as well. So that's I've been saying this, kind of swimming upstream on this a little bit for the last few weeks. Like, if we're concentrating all on these elections, but nobody's voting.
Yeah.
What do we? Is the story that big? Is Britt versus Brooks that big a deal?
Is the story that big for who?
For anybody.
Yes.
Is for our audience.
Yes, it's a major story for the audience.
They're not voting.
Well, our audience is voting. I mean, they're the ones that are texting us right now, telling us that the turnout's low.
That means our audience is not turning out.
No, our audience is certainly turning out, and our audience certainly
cares about what's going on here. We have no evidence that our audience or anybody's audience is turning out.
The evidence is right there on the text line. The people that are texting us and telling us that the turnout's low. Our audience is out there voting.
They're telling us that other members of our audience are not there.
I don't think that's
what they're telling us.
Well, I think a majority of our audience is going to go out to vote.
I think we should keep talking about that pop-up.
I don't think so. I think fewer people care about that.
Anyway, so
then Fox News. I had it on in here in the studio yesterday, just kind of as, I wouldn't call it background noise, but just it was a screen that was on, and right around 12:01, they were running a story on their national channel talking about this runoff here in Alabama.
Interesting.
And
okay.
I think it does. It does have a lot of, it carries a lot of weight, you know, because it's likely whoever wins the runoff for that particular race will today become the Senate and become the next senator in Alabama.
We definitely have two very
different candidates.
Yeah, we've got two very different candidates. We have an idea of what they're going to do when they get there. We've got one that could be there for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
potentially, right?
Oh, yeah. Either. I think because Tuberville, you know, while he's older than Katie Britt, I mean, how old is Dick Durbin? How long has mm-hmm. he been in the Senate? So maybe in 30 years we're looking at like a, I don't know, how old is Tuberville? And is he in his,
he's in his
late
70s.
50s? Or
No, he's
Tuberville's
older
in his 70s?
He might be.
Oh, he's held up well, hasn't he?
He's held up
let's
well.
Let's see. Let's see how old Tommy Tuberville is. 67 years old.
Oh, 67. Okay.
So, I don't know. We could be looking at a 97-year-old Tommy Tuberville come 2052.
He's going to be a pain in the neck when he's 97.
At this rate, at that point, 96% of America will be drag queens. So, that would mean that a lot of the Senate is drag queens, but he could hold Senate for a while. I mean, I don't think 20 years would be out of the question, but will the politics of Alabama change the way that we've seen Georgia turning purple and Florida, which was purple for a very long time? I mean, the most purple state you could have when you look back at the Gore Bush election,
right?
It's snapped right back to red. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to, so many retirees moving to Florida, first off, and many retirees who have the money to move to Florida are basically conservative, right? And also the number of Cuban migrants that have moved there who have seen, like Frances Martell, I don't know if she lives in Florida or not. We had her on midday yesterday, but they've seen what those kind of politics, those far-left politics, are like in action. And
they don't like them.
They don't like them one bit. And so with the rise of Ron DeSantis, and this is something I plan to talk about a little bit later on Midday Mobile also, as we look at the 2024 possible Republican nominees. Mike Pence made some waves this week, DeSantis, of course, and then, of course, former President Donald Trump. But who knows? You're right about Katie Britt. She is young enough that she could hold office for a very long time.
30, 40 years. Dalton, the biggest difference between Alabama is not going to become the next Georgia. There's just not the numbers there. Georgia turned purple basically because Atlanta, turned blue or purple, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
In Georgia, you've got one major metropolitan area. You've got a few other cities. You've got Athens, Macon, Savannah, Columbus. But basically, they're smaller than Mobile. So you've got, they were when I lived there anyway, you've only got one major city, and that's what that's the axis that tilted the state. In Alabama, it's different. We've got Birmingham would be our Atlanta, but it's nowhere near the size of Atlanta. And then going from there, you've got another, an assortment of mid-sized cities.
Yeah, and you look at Baldwin County, certainly red.
Mm-hmm.
I think some have said the most red county in the state.
And growing, so you've got, that red base right there.
And the city of Mobile would be purple, if we're doing the color thing still, it would be purple on the map because there's a good mix of Democrats and Republicans here in Mobile.
No doubt.
But the state of Alabama is red. I mean, there were more percentage-wise, Trump, I believe, received more votes in Alabama than he did any other state. And that brings us to another question. What does his endorsement mean for Britt? I mean, she was election night as we were in here looking at these different races. We were almost ready to say, hey, Katie Britt could walk away with it tonight. We thought she may win going away back on May 24th. Mo Brooks fought back over the course of the night, and now he found himself about 15, 16 points down by the end of the night. Was he able to close that gap? The polls say no. And if you heard the tone of the two on the Jeff Poor Show yesterday, one certainly sounded very confident, and it wasn't Mo Brooks.
Yeah.
He was doing his best to pull out the vote and get as many people out there as he could. It would be a major surprise if he were able to pull out the victory.
If Katie was like on the 10-yard line going in, and Mo was on his own 10-yard line, kind of what it feels like right now. He's throwing a long pass, hoping something happens.
We've seen it happen before, though.
8:16, Dan and Dalton, and you, 251-343-0106. Morning from Dan and Dalton. Call us if you like, 251-343-0106. That's also the text line where people are building my case for me that nobody's voting. Jim in Georgetown says, yes, Dan, we're voting. He goes on to say, only 25 so far at Turner Elementary in beautiful sunny Georgetown. That says you're not voting. You're voting.
What's his last line there?
It's only 8 o'clock.
Exactly. That makes my point.
Weak sauce. Let's see here. Aussie girl, I got a robocall from Katie Britt last night, and I cussed her out.
Wow.
That's pretty funny. Who else here now?
You cussed out the robo?
She cussed out the robot? Robo, yeah. Do we know who Tuberville is endorsing? I say neither, but he was photographed hugging Katie Britt at a cocktail event.
Yeah, he went to an event at the end of last year for Katie Britt. Probably, you know.
I thought they were just at it was a neutral event, and he just was photographed there.
You may be right. I thought it was a Katie Britt event, but maybe not the best move for a sitting senator in the state to endorse one or the other.
Yeah, I don't think he has.
But, I mean, that hasn't stopped plenty before, right? So Rob says, my theory on the Brooks-Britt race. By the way, so many of these are... how does a journalist decide whether to say her middle name or not? Because half the stories say Katie Boyd Britt, and remember all of them at the very beginning of her run.
Yeah, I think that's over. I think that story I read this morning, the Katie Boyd Britt sounds out of place now. It's just Katie Britt.
I'm going to start going by all three of my given names. I'm going to say it every time.
Okay. Yeah.
Dalton Ellis Orwig.
So. Well, Ellis?
Yeah, that's right.
Very nice.
You know the island?
Yeah, there's a prison on that island.
Is there?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Rob says, my theory on the Brooks-Britt race is that
You're wrong on every turn today.
I guess so. Is that the low turnout helps Brooks counter the $17 million of McConnell's rhino money. Not predicting a win, but I certainly believe it's possible. Britt had a lot of Democrats vote for her in the primary. They may not be as motivated. They can vote for her since they voted Republican in the primary. And that's a huge discussion point today, actually, is crossover voting. I'll have Secretary of State John Merrill on Midday Mobile later today.
Not enough Democrats with the motivation to do that.
Well, possibly in at least one race. This race up in District 27 for State Senate. With Tom Watley, who won by one vote.
Crazy.
Over, actually, Jay Hovey, the city councilman in Auburn, unseated Watley, beating him by one vote. And they're blaming, basically, Democrat crossover votes here. At least Watley is. And if you look at, on the opinion page, I found this thanks to Jeff Poor tweeting about it this morning, a guest op-ed on the New York Times, Pregnancy, Guns, and Politics in Alabama. And here is the opening graph. I'm a left-leaning Democrat, but on a left-leaning Democrat.
Wow.
But on May 24th, I voted on the Republican ballot in Alabama's primary election. The state's primaries are open, which means Democrats can request a Republican ballot and vice versa. Alabama is a deep red state, and I wanted some say in electing the officials who will represent me, because they will almost all certainly be Republican. And have a say I did. Tom Watley, the state senator from my district, finished behind Jay Hovey by a single vote. I voted for Hovey because I find Watley's policies and legacy so abhorrent. If I hadn't cast my vote on a Republican ballot, the two men would be tied. So that's this person.
That's quite a story.
Anton Disclafani, a novelist and professor of writing, and as he noted, left-leaning Democrat.
He's got to be a professor of writing to sign his own name.
I guess so. So that is something that happens, and I'm going to ask John Merrill about this. So it is illegal, and only recently illegal, to crossover vote for the initial primary and then in the runoff bounce back to Democrat. Whatever the turnout for Republicans is today, it will be much, much lower for Alabama Democrats. While there are some races across the state for some more localized races, for Mobile and Baldwin counties, there's only one runoff that's on the ballot,
yeah.
And that is for the gubernatorial primary for the Democrats. So what do you think the turnout for that will be, for people just showing up to vote in one race only?
Abysmal,
exactly. Trey said voted at St. Paul's, one other person voting. This other texter said had quite a line at Meadow Lake this morning. And Gus said, I'm going to go vote harder today. Maybe he meant later, but that's hilarious.
No, I think
it sounds
like
he's going
to. Yeah, he's trying to give it his all because the vote means, look, if there's going to be less people voting, which we know that's going to be, your vote means more.
Right.
Look at that guy up there, the Democrat, that basically he voted a guy in by himself.
By himself.
His vote.
Yeah, and then bragged about it on the New York Times. there are some other races on the ballot today. 7 in Mobile. Well, 6 for a lot of Mobile, but 7 if you're going to vote in the House District 100 race. And we could see some closer ones than we'll see in the Senate runoff. potentially, because Mo Brooks could always pull that upset. So for House District 100, this race has been discussed quite a bit over the last month.
Victor Gaston leaving office
after retiring. 40 years.
Right.
After 40 years. And Mark Shirey had most of the vote in the primary in May, so it would take quite the upset from Pete Kupfer in order to pull that one off. And who knows? Whoever ends up in that seat, will they hold it for decades like Gaston did? I mean, the potential's there. What about for Secretary of State? I'll be talking to Merrill later. Well, the next, you know, after November, it's likely that when we're here talking with the Secretary of State, that that's Secretary of State Jim Ziegler that we're talking to. And Merrill, I wanted to mention this yesterday while we were talking with Todd Stacey, who on Capital Journal talked with both Ziegler and Wes Allen, who are running for Secretary of State. And Merrill is good at getting national press. And that's almost like, it is part of the job for the Attorney General and the Secretary of State. Now, they have their roles and what they're supposed to do. You know, the Attorney General is supposed to enforce law here in Alabama. Secretary of State is to make his job is to make sure that everything's right on the voting front. But they're able to bring attention to Alabama in both positive and negative ways. In many ways, for conservatives, it's positive when they're talking about what's going on here. You've heard Merrill plenty of times talk about how the goal for him is to make Alabama's elections is the safest in the nation, the most least hackable in the nation. So,
and also a big turnout. He was all for people making sure that our numbers were right in terms of the census.
Mm-hmm.
He was behind that 100% and pushing on that with Sean over and over again. And his goal in 2020 was to get as many Alabamians to the polls.
Well,
is that really your job as Secretary of State?
I think so, yeah. And it shines a better light on Alabama for sure if he's able to do that in a way that doesn't lead to election fraud.
Right.
Will Jim Ziegler or Wes Allen be able to handle that role?
Yeah, they can handle it, but it's like, I'm just, you know, Wes Allen's definitely got, he's had more money. He has less name recognition, and that's crazy a little bit because Ziegler has been out there, he's been around, and very well known in South Alabama and Mobile in particular. But he also has got some statewide recognition, and so Allen's been swimming upstream in this race, running a lot of ads here down the stretch. Former Alabama football player, you know, he's got that going for him. I think his dad was in politics as well. He's been a judge. He's been a state senator. He's got a lot of things going for him. But for whatever reason, you know, that's going to be a tight race.
Yeah,
he seems to be at least as qualified.
Yeah, he's trailing in the polls.
Yeah, he is.
And then talk about an up-and-comer, Andrew Sorrell,
yeah,
running for state auditor. Stan Cook also in that race.
Charlie Hustle, Andrew Sorrell, man.
Stan Cook talked about how much he's up against it because Sorrell has had a lot of money to spend this cycle.
8:30, Dan and Dalton, more. 251-343-0106, give us a call. All right, don't pile on. Ellis Island is where you get your freedom. Rikers Island is when you're in prison.
Yeah, told
so
you.
It's the exact opposite.
Yes.
When I said Ellis Island had a prison on it, Rikers Island in New York had a prison on it.
Yeah.
I'm arguing with myself right now.
Sit.
Also, this argument, I said nobody's voting. We're talking about all these elections like they mean something. From 7-8 this morning, 45 voters at Fairhope Civic Center. Pathetic. That's what Dr. Lou says.
Yeah, but we've had at least 50 people, maybe 100, since we started talking about this, tell us that they've voted.
They're only voting because I said nobody's voting.
Okay. You're the one. I'll ask Merrill to send you a medal when all is said and done.
I'm getting people out.
For the state's 12% turnout or whatever we
Dan
end up
Brennan
at.
Dan Brennan getting
here.
The vote out.
That's exactly right. But we do love the text. Keep them coming. 251-343-0106. And if my words were twisted earlier, what I was trying to say is that it is illegal to cross over. If you've voted in one party in May, you can't vote for the other party
this
in
time
the runoff. Right. That's illegal and only recently made illegal by the legislature, I think a couple years ago. So there's plenty more to discuss, and the Jeff Poor Show will have a lot of this later. I wanted to get to something I've kind of been holding back here for a little while because we haven't had a whole lot of time to discuss it. And it's a bit of a contentious subject, but you know us here on FM Talk 106.5, we barrel into those sometimes even if we're probably shouldn't. The percentage of Americans who say they believe in God has dipped to the lowest number in the past nearly 80 years. This is a Gallup poll that came out, I want to say, a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. They call it the Values and Belief Poll. It was conducted from May 2nd to 22nd. 81% of people that answered said that they believed in God, which is actually a higher number than I would have guessed. But that's down from 6 percentage points from the 87% who said they believed in God in the 2017 poll. This year is the lowest percentage in Gallup's trend since the public opinion poll first asked the question in 1944.
What was the answer then?
Well, it was higher then, but this is the lowest they've ever had.
Oh, this is the lowest period.
Okay. Since they began in 44.
I was wondering if in 1944 the number was 90, lower, but it was not.
98% in 1944.
Right in the middle of World War II.
Said they believed in God, yeah. And this year's poll found 17% of Americans said they do not believe in God. I would guess, I would have guessed, and still do, even with this poll, that that number is actually higher. The poll found that the belief in God has plummeted the most in recent years among young adults and people on the left of the political spectrum. Let's see here. Gallup said those groups show drops of 10 or more percentage points, comparing 2022 figures to an average of the 2013 to 2017 polls. Most other key subgroups have experienced at least a moderate decline, although conservatives and married adults have had essentially no change. The poll found the groups with the largest declines are also the groups that are currently least likely to believe in God, including liberals at 62%. Young adults, 68%, Democrats, 72%, and belief in God is highest among political conservatives at 94%, Republicans at 92%. I think that the number of Democrats or liberals who believe in God is much higher in the South than it is in maybe the West and Northeast. That would be my contention. And that kind of goes hand in hand. It may have been in the same poll here. A record-breaking 50% of Americans say that the U.S. has poor moral values. Only 1% of Americans rate the country's values as excellent. The Gallup poll said Americans' views of the state of moral values in the U.S. are dismal and their expectations for the future are grim. This has generally been the case over the course of the 20-year trend, but negative ratings of the current state of moral values are the worst they've ever been. Half of the poll's respondents indicated they believe the country has poor values. Only 1% of those polled, I already read that, said excellent. 12% rated the country's moral values as good. So good and excellent gets 13% of the poll for moral values. Republicans were most likely to rate the country's values as poor, with 72% of Republican respondents rating the values as poor, a number that's risen sharply since Trump left office. And I do wonder what those numbers look like comparing Republicans and Democrats when Trump was in office, then when Obama and Bush, because it probably swings just like the midterm elections swing. Whenever you have a Republican in office, generally the midterms swing the other way. Mm-hmm. When you have a Democrat in office, they swing the Republicans way. But I think these two polls could be tied together a little bit because the non-belief in not just God, but really any kind of higher power, like, if you can't draw those people back to religion, and not necessarily saying that someone has to believe something or not believe something, but even if you don't believe in a higher power, those moral values, if you want a righteous nation, those moral values have to be replaced with something similar to, right?
So there's got to be a reason that you are moral. There's got to be a reason that you understand clearly right from wrong. You've got to demonstrate that every day in your life.
Yeah.
Whether you're religious or not. And you're saying the tendency would be that somebody that is not religious doesn't have enough of a foundation to act that way day in, day out.
Well, I think a lot of people that aren't probably could and do have that foundation, and a lot of that depends on their parents or whoever raised them, you know, instilling that in them, that it's important that you be a good person. Mm-hmm. Or I guess even if you're not a good person, somehow, you know, bury that criminality side deep inside. I don't know. I'm not like a psychiatrist or anything like that, but what is replacing the moral values of those who have quit believing in God or who never did believe in God? And if you look at the schools right now, what kind of moral values are they teaching the students? And I don't think very many grown adults believe that children these days are being taught the moral values that will keep this country safe for our descendants for the years to come. And I think a lot of people are worried about that, and this poll shows that a little bit.
You know, it comes to an interesting point because you say, well, those things need to be taught at home, period. Well, not so fast, because I was just mentioning to you that I spend more time with you in a given week than nearly anybody else.
I'm sorry.
Me too. But I've got a son, you know? Of course, when Zach was alive and well, he was so often, he was training or he was gone. But I've got a son right here in town. So to make the argument, well, you just have to teach those things. It doesn't matter what happens at school because you've got to teach these kids right from wrong every night or every day when you do have them. But the fact is, just like you're here every day with me, as opposed to Joseph, those kids are in school every day. They're not just running willy-nilly, right? So what they're taught in school certainly does have a big effect on the way they see the world, the way they see right and wrong.
Yeah, and of course, so many kids are taught, you know, by other kids. We have great teachers around here, a lot of great teachers, but there's only so much they can do throughout the day, right? And I think from the top down, I keep coming back to, you know, everybody's on streaming apps these days, and one of the streaming apps we go to for my kid to watch is Paramount, because she is a huge fan of Paw Patrol. Mm-hmm. And you might remember Paw Patrol went through a bit of a skirmish a few years ago. I guess it was during the summer of 2020, during those riots, because it's about a bunch of puppies. You know, it's an animated kid show. It's about a bunch of puppies who do important jobs for the people. You have a cop named Chase, okay. Cop dog. You have a firefighter dog, construction dog, blah, blah, blah. But people went after it because the cop dog, and this was when the defund the police movement was moving. So, well, anyway, I go to this Paramount app, and I can't escape. I'm not going to it to watch something for me. I'm going to it to watch for my daughter. I cannot escape this show, RuPaul's Drag Race. And it's been on the air for a long time, and I've never cared. Honestly, I don't care what RuPaul does. I don't care who they are.
Would you care if your kid comes across
it? The simple fact is, yeah, I can't get to Paw Patrol without seeing RuPaul and the Drag Race show. And even worse, in that ad, when it comes up on the screen, you're faced, first off, when you get on the screen with a huge banner ad showing it, you click on the actual video to watch Paw Patrol. And half the dang time, the first commercial is for RuPaul's Drag Race with Nancy Pelosi in it, saying that Drag Race, that the show exemplifies American values or whatever. So that's not, I don't think, what's being taught in a majority of homes, but...
Well, it's being thrown at you.
But regardless of whether you're Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, you know, insert religion here, or atheist, the simple fact is that moral values need to be taught, and I don't care who you believe in or what you believe in. That's America became great, and that's because America had certain values, and a lot of those values came because of where the immigrants to America initially from what they escaped, and they taught it all the way down the line. You know, self-discipline. There was a lot of individualism, which I believe individualism is important, but I also believe it's really important that if we're going to, you know, survive a lot of the onslaught right now,
got to be united in some way.
People unite, exactly.
You've got to have a culture that is strong enough, a culture that it basically is on the up and up. And we find that many of us through religion. It's there. Read the Bible. It's there. And that we find comfort, we find strength, and we find like a moral compass within the Bible. So I definitely understand what you're saying in terms of what religion, what the role it can play. But that Paramount, that's, if I had a little one that was scrolling through stuff, I'd be scared to death what they were going to come across.
It's absolutely, it makes me so mad. And maybe I'm just getting old now, but it just feels like the values that are from the top down, so many kids are raised by TV, and unfortunately some of these politicians, that degeneracy is being taught as the values you need to have. And that comes through, in many ways, acceptance of all people, that everyone should be accepted for what they are. And not to say that people should be mean to anyone else in particular, but
Yeah.
That won't make this country
well,
great.
Well, I watched Yogi Bear as a kid. And I did not grow up stealing picnic baskets. He did all the time. Disgraceful. 847.
Another gold star for 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Got that right.
Their customer reviews. Here's one from TK for 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I was in the 9:30 to 11:30 slot. The two employees were at my house at 9:40. They also called me when they were on their way. Because we put the old furniture by the road, everything was quick and easy. Took about 10 minutes. We were able to get a good price, and the two employees even offered to take some boxes and another item that I had set aside for regular trash. The two employees were very nice and were appreciative of my business. And there are plenty more exemplary customer reviews where that one comes from. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and the crew have been doing great work here in Mobile and Baldwin counties for well over a decade now, and when I tell you they make life easy, they sure do, especially when you're looking at heat indexes. I don't know how to say that, but like we're seeing it here in these next few days, up to 115. Why get out there and do that when you can have Trey and the crew come do it for you? They'll be in and out in no time, and you can get on with your day. It's so easy to make an appointment. Sometimes you can even get same-day service if you put yourself in a bit of a lurch, and you find a time that works for you. If it works for them, they'll call you when they're on the way, and their friendly professional teams do all the heavy lifting. So set up your appointment today by calling them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you can go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Joshua on the text line says, hey, you've got Paramount? That's where the new Butthead and Beavis is.
Beavis and Butthead, yeah.
So is he watching Beavis and Butthead?
She is not, no.
But, just checking.
But if she acts like me, she'll probably start sounding like one or the other before too long. And they're not running Beavis and Butthead ads all over the entire thing. Just like if they were running South Park ads over everything. I would be, you know, not necessarily excited about that when I turn it on for my three-year-old to watch Paw Patrol. I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, I agree with it.
Jim says, let's see, that's about the elections today. I'll get to that here in just a second. Jessica says the left side does not see teachers as parents. They spend more time with kids than the parents from 8 to 3. For the most part, they are moms with kids. You have to allow them to be moms to students so those morals are reinstalled in the classroom. You can't restrict teachers to all of this crazy stuff, especially for the kid that doesn't have a stable home life. They need teachers. Ron says, well said, gentlemen. Bonesaw says, if the only argument is to stay out of jail, three hot meals and a bed, then our nation will fall. Aussie girl says, I worked with a doctor from Serbia and he was raised atheist. They thought the communists were going to take over his country, and he was a very high moral character and greatly admired. He told me back in 08 that Obama was a Marxist. And you see that often. I mean, as much as we complain so often about the illegal immigration that's going on at the southern border, there are a lot of people who came from worse places who do have pretty high moral character, regardless of what they're...
You are... That's very true.
And that comes down the generations in order, as a means to survive, as much as anything.
Yeah.
You know, to keep your eye on the ball, I guess, as it were, and make sure you're doing things the right way so you don't step out of line and end up being, you know, something bad happening to you or your family. Bonesaw said, you literally took the words out of my mouth. That's a scary statistic because the moral values have no reason without the belief in a higher power, he says. If someone doesn't have a belief in God, that's one thing, but what replaces those values? Yeah. And plenty of texts. We really do appreciate all of these texts that are coming
in. Talking about Marxism, too, we had Francis Martel on yesterday talking about the fact that Colombia has just elected a Marxist, out-and-out Marxist, former terrorist president. Think about that a little bit. And she just talks about it is important. Does that matter to America? She says it does. And our policy overall needs to be reworked. This is what she's got to say about us and policy concerning Latin America.
Yeah, I mean, the big concern here is just that the United States government has never, and I say this as a, you know, a Cuban-American who is an annexationist, like, we should have been a state, and Teddy Roosevelt did not care. Never in U.S. history have we cared about what's going on south of our border. After the Monroe Doctrine, we just checked out. Whereas Russia and China are very much not like that. China's colonizing parts of the Philippines. Russia's obviously colonizing Ukraine. And we're spending all of our energy defending Ukraine Ukraine and Taiwan and the Philippines and not really caring about Venezuela, where there were nuclear bombers there from Russia in 2018, and we just didn't care. And that's hundreds of miles from our shores. So it's just, we need a really abrupt shift in the way we view our foreign policy.
You know, not only she's smart, but she is Cuban-American. She brings that perspective to it, too. But it is interesting that we're fighting wars and helping fight wars here and there and protecting sovereignty in Taiwan, and yet right below us, just 100 miles, hundreds, I should say, but 400 miles from Florida. She was mentioning that there's parts of Colombia that are that close.
Yeah, I mean, just...
And all the Russian, Chinese influence that are going to be rampant in that government, pretty scary.
It is, and it's like this big game of, like I said yesterday, big game of battleship, or there's probably a more direct relationship to a different game that we've all played as kids, I'm sure, but that we're trying to grow influence and have been for decades over there in Eastern Europe and near China also, in order to kind of pin them in and keep them from spreading their governments westward. And at the same time, China and Russia have been making inroads in South America, and you wonder where all of this will lead. I mean, think about the Cold War and Cuba's relationship to the Soviet Union and how close Cuba is to our shores.
Yep.
And Cuba's still a communist country, obviously, and then so many that are in. And what's going to happen with Brazil and Bolsonaro? That's another very important thing with that presidential election coming up also.
Yeah, Venezuela, Colombia, Brazil for sure. You know, we got to keep our eye on the ball, but it doesn't seem like this current administration is even addressing any of that. Have you heard anything from the Biden administration after the election in Colombia?
I don't think I've seen him comment on that, but who knows what's going on behind the scenes, really.
Yeah. But statements should be made publicly, like, you know, we got a problem here, everybody. 8:58. Thanks, Dalton.
Thank you, Dan.
Good job today. And your midday mobile later on.
That's right. I'll be on midday. Also, Jeff Poore coming up. He'll talk with State Representative Wes Allen, running for Secretary of State. Also, Ray Melick, 1819, and Dave Mowry, a political consultant, coming up.